Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can tell.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Soul and Now and the Future with the Economic Impact on Black America, and I'm your host, Ronald Bethane, and today's date is August 28, 2019. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the year is halfway gone. It has gone, and we are here still on the airways of Blog Talk Radio, streaming over the Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and you know those who join us on a regular basis, you know I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948, and please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Well, we have a very, very exciting show for you today. We don't have any guests scheduled, but we've done a little research, and I think we're going to, bring some basics in the on this energy field 101, and we're going to look at this industry, what it means to you when you pay the cost to be the boss. It's called the rent's due, the mortgage due, and the utilities are due. So you need to know what you're paying for. So we're going to take a quick look at this industry. And this is an article that was recently published in Red Clay, and it talks about the utility industry. Now, this particular article was published on May 29th, 2017, and then it was a recent upgrade to this article was done on January 10th, 2019. And what we're going to do is look at what this industry is talking about as it relates to the regulatory process in the electricity industry. And I think it's very, very important for the black community to talk about energy, because it's something that's not a discussion in black talk vernacular. We spend most of our time talking about the isms, classism, sexism, racism, police brutality, and the lack of access to capital, which is, we live in a capitalist society, which we know is called capitalism. But when you're talking energy, you're talking money. So we're going to delve down into this industry. We're going to look at this whole process. Now, this particular, as I indicated, article was done by Reagan Davis. Welcome to our industry, Industry Series 101. As a part of the internal training of new hires, Red Clay Consulting provides an A to Z introduction to the energy industry because our industry is so unique, we know its importance for each of our staff to understand all the components, not just the products and services we provide. Our experts collaborate to compile and introduce to the utility industry. The purpose was to share this expertise not only as part of our new hire process, but with colleagues, clients, and even the general public. Oh, even the general public. Damn, where do you get your money from? I mean, who pays the bills? It's called John Doe Q. We know him as the general public. Well, that's nice to know that you wanted to share some information, Mr. Reagan, with the general public. The first edition of this information is focused primarily on the electricity segment and includes through explanation and participants operation, market dynamics, regulation, settlement, smart grid, smart meters, and more. We add to the campaign weekly. Well, that's great that you've been adding to this campaign. Now, number one, what is the regulation in the utility industry? We need to know what is a regulation. Regulation is in the utility industry refers to rules created by governments and local bodies which the utility companies must adhere to by law. Electric utilities are regulated by state, federal, and local agencies. These agencies govern the prices that charge the terms of their service to the consumer, their budgets and construction plans, and their programs for energy efficiency and other services. Now, when we began to look at this industry, there's a map which is very, very, very important to the African American. It shows the states that are regulated, the states that are deregulated, and the states where regulations have been suspended. Regulated versus deregulated markets. I know this is very, very important because this is the reason why we have no economic development projects, no African-American-owned farms of any significance, no historically black colleges of any significance that have built large-scale solar farms to offset their energy costs. And we know with school opening up, everybody's taking their kids back to school, but they cannot open the doors without electricity. And the number two fixed cost at any college and university, after you pay your faculty and your security and your maintenance to maintain these institutions, because without those individuals in those schools, you might as well keep these kids home. Regulated markets feature vertically integrated utilities that own and control the entire flow of electricity from the generation to the meter. Examples in the U.S. include Florida, Colorado, Idaho, and Kentucky. Conversely, utilities are deregulated markets must divest all ownership in generation and transmission are only responsible for distribution, operations, and maintenance from the interconnection to the grid to the meter, billing the ratepayer, acting as the provider of last resort. This is in regulated markets. Deregulated markets feature grid operators that administer wholesale markets to ensure reliability on the grid and prevent blackouts, multiple retail suppliers, or load servicing entitles known as SLES by generation and the sale of the electricity to the end user. To the right is a U.S. map showing the electricity that is regulated and where it is not. Now, we're going to look at these regulated states. When you begin to look at West Virginia, you look at Kentucky, you look at North Carolina, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, all these are in regulated states. When you begin to look at in your Midwest states like Ohio, Michigan, Oklahoma, Kansas. So when in total you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Let me restart my count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. So we're talking about 50% of the in 27 with Hawaii. We're talking 27 states with the U.S. territories of Puerto Rico being regulated states. It's very, very key when we begin to look at the African-American population. Now, deregulated states, you're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. You're going to have 16 with Texas. You're going to have 16 deregulated states, and you're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven states where regulation has been suspended. This becomes very, very important as we look at where regulation is, who controls the market, and what type of, if you're interested in entering into this solar or the wind industry, and you're interested in building power plants, whether it be wind farms or solar farms, and you're interested in getting a return on investment in terms of what it's going to cost you to build, clear that land, do the necessary geological studies, your zoning process, the whole process it takes to, in fact, the feasibility study to do and build a solar or wind farm, these steps must be taken. But you're looking at the interconnect, which will be the power lines that connect, whether you have to build a substation, which will be able to handle that energy from that power plant. If you're building a large-scale plant over 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 megawatt farm, all that energy can't go on the grid. So you've got to be able to do what? Identify off-takers in that local market area that will purchase, buy that energy from you. If you're not able to identify those off-takers, and if you're not able to interconnect that farm so with the grid, you can't get the energy to the person who has agreed to buy that energy, because the regulated markets, those utilities who are natural monopolies, can say, no, we're not going to allow you to participate. And we're going to touch on some articles in terms of we're not going to allow you to uplink that power, which keeps you out of the marketplace. And this is one of the major reasons why we don't have African Americans who have farms, solar farms on their farmlands, private families who have land that's sitting there just paying taxes, where they haven't looked at the option of building solar farms or wind farms. Because all the states where you have our population base, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Tennessee. They regulated states, ladies and gentlemen. This is an issue of discussion. We're talking about the issues of climate change. They're talking about trying to, by 2030, to replace the oil industry with renewable energy. Well, Bernie Sanders is talking about investing $16.3 billion in renewables if he's elected president. Where and how do we benefit other than being kept in a consumer mode in this energy industry? These are discussions that I did not hear them at the ABE Public Policy Summit back in February of this year. I don't know what's going to be discussed at the Congressional Black Caucus this year, but I know that the White House Initiative on HBCUs are holding 52 sessions, and they don't have one talking about renewable energy, which is, to me, is a travesty. So these are very, very important. This is a very, very, very important energy industry, because everything starts with energy and every damn thing ends with energy. Make no mistakes about that. There will be nothing happening on Labor Day weekend without electricity. If the lights can't come on and you got no power to power nothing up, you won't have any social activities on your Labor Day weekend. Energy is the key. All economics is the base. You can't get into an ATM machine to access your dollars and cents that you're going every day to that job without electricity. Everything is shut down without energy. This is one of the games that we cannot afford. We cannot afford not to have this discussion. And I remember Carl Nelson saying on his show one day, I called in on WOL 1450 to the Carl Nelson talk show. He said to me, well, black folks aren't buying it. Brother Nelson, I disagree. We are buying energy. We just don't get a damn thing in return. We're just made to be consumers. And you... what you don't know will hurt you in America. Capitalism is just like going in front of the judge. And the man said, the judge will tell you, ignorance of the law is no excuse. So you got to think before you act. And believe me, it's getting more and more and more difficult to do that, because folks out here have lost their minds. Period. Now, and they want to talk about mental illness, let's deal with it. For us not to be talking about this energy industry is shows to me that we're not playing with a full deck. So I'm going to continue to break down this industry, the evolution of the utility regulations. Now, most businesses, the free market sets prices for products, services based on supply and demand. This open market provides companies the opportunity to provide a product or service and is, if successful, earn a profit depending on the cost, quality, and market factors. Originally, that's also how it works in the electricity utility companies when the industry was born. Inventors and investors could request franchises to create electric companies with few barriers to the market entry. Many did, and the competition determined the rate the consumer would pay. However, disorganization was a major issue. Lines and poles from multiple companies occupied the same streets. Services were unreliable, The grids weren't interconnected, and it was inefficient and at times dangerous. This eventually led to the creation of state commissions and regulated electric utilities. It's interesting to me, where was our elected officials talking about this when all these companies were formed? I guess we had no black elected officials because we've been struggling with so many other issues, with the isms, racism, sexism, economic redlining. So we couldn't even look at this end, this where all the money and who controls and who are the billionaires in this country. If you look closely, you find out they're tied into the energy industry. The primary reason for regulations is that the utilities are natural monopolies, meaning that the single provider is often able to serve the overall demand in the region at a lower total cost than any combination of smaller entities. In absence of any competition among the service providers to set lower rates, the service provider might restrict output and set prices at levels higher than that are economically justified. Regulation serves the function of ensuring that price structures are followed, that service is adequate, and companies are responsive to consumers' needs. Yeah, that's what they're supposed to do. And that things like new service orders and billing questions are handled responsibly. Another reason for regulation is that utilities must adhere to strict government safety standards because their infrastructure runs throughout our communities and the public would be affected by sagging wires, ruptured pipes, and other problems. The production and the distribution of electricity also has environmental and public health impacts. Tell that to the black community. Through the emission of pollutants, the use of land, and even creation of noise that can adversely affect the public. Generating power often produces pollution transmission lines that have both visual and physical impacts on land use. Regulators may therefore impose environmental responsibilities on utilities to protect the public's interests. Finally, this gives utilities crucial roles in the economy and in society, general welfare. Service reliability standards are often imposed. Electric industry remains one of the most regulated in the United States. It is regulated by both federal, state levels, sometimes by local regulations. Also, rules and regulations can provide protection for consumers, help keep workers safe, ensure businesses do not collude to raise prices. However, we argue that too much regulation of markets is unnecessary and can lead to inefficiencies and unnecessary costs. Well, this is 101, ladies and gentlemen. The basics. Who are the regulated authorities? A range of federal, state, local level entities regulate the U.S. electric sector. They are the Federal Regulatory Commission, known as FERC, F-E-R-C, which regulates interstate electric sales, wholesale electric rates, and hydroelectric facilities, licensing, among other energy matters affecting interstate commerce. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, regulates certain emissions from power generating facilities. North American Electric Reliability Corporation, that's called NERC, under the Federal Regulatory Commission, which ensures that the bulk of electricity systems in America is reliable, adequate, and secure. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which oversees safety and licensing of nuclear plants, and the Department of Energy. DOE is responsible for promoting energy security as well as scientific and technology innovation. Other relevant entities, but ones that are typically less directed, involve the day-to-day electric sector regulatory includes Commodity Futures Trading Commission, FFTC, which regulates certain commodity trades, including power, hedges, and trade options. The Department of Justice, JOD, and the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, which enforces antitrust laws. You do? That's interesting, because most utilities are natural monopolies. So, you know, when you read this stuff, you understand how it interconnects, but you question whether they're actually doing any damn thing. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, which regulates the issuance of corporate securities from energy companies, among other things, Occupational Safety, Health Administration, OSHA, which regulates safety standards for certain power facilities. Basic functions of regulatory commissions. Now, this is very, very important, because when these hearings come down, most of the time you get a handful of us in the room. Almost all regulatory authorities perform at the same basic functions, determining the revenue requirement, allocating costs among customer classes, designing price structures and price levels that will collect and allow revenues while providing appropriate price signals to customers, setting service quality standards and customer protection requirements, overseeing the financial responsibility of utilities, including reviewing and approving utility capital investments and long-term planning, serving as an arbitrator in disputes between customer and the utility, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And it breaks down, it has a map, a chart that breaks down the different branches of the Regulatory Commission. And all this can be found logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. You can log on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Click on our news and events tab. Now, most state commissions consist of three or five appointees or elected commissioners and a professional staff. Shown here is the organizational chart for the Federal Regulatory Commission, which I've just indicated. You will be able to find that on our website by logging on to positivechangepc.com. Scroll over to our news and events tab. Click on that link and scroll down, and you'll find this particular article. As an example, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, PUCO, lists their organization and their tasks as below on their website. Administration, the Office of Administration provides internal support, including docketing necessary for the day-to-day operations of an agency. The Attorney General Public Utilities Section represents the PUCO staff before the commission and represents the commission itself before the Supreme Court of Ohio and other state and federal courts and federal administrative agencies. Business resources. The business resource development includes Human Resource Division, the Physical and the Office Services Division, and the Information Technology Division. Commission offices. Commission offices include commissioners and their aides. Legal departments, attorney examiners conduct public hearings, issue procedural entries, and draft the options and orders issued by the commission. Public affairs, the public affairs office foster the PUC image of communicating utility information to Ohioans in a timely, accurate, and understandable manner. Rate and analysis. The Rate and Analysis Department conducts independent energy cost reports, participate in federal state programs, investigations regarding energy policy delivery and reliability, monitors and advises the utility's conformance with current corporate oversight practices and procedures, monitors the energy efficiency of portfolio compliance requirements, process utility rate changes, request and perform technical investigations. The department is comprised of administration, market and corporate oversight, public research, telecom technology, regulatory services, and siting efficiency and renewable divisions. Service monitoring and enforcement. The service monitoring and enforcement of the department examines the quality of service provided by the utility company to ensure that safe, dependable, and quality services are being provided. The department also handles requests for information, complaints, and attempts to resolve customer problems without the need for formal hearings. Transportation. The Transportation Department regulates railroads, trucking, buses, and watercraft companies across a broad range of activities. Ladies and gentlemen, you will be able to find this information by logging on to our website once again at positivechangepc.com, at positivechangepc.com. Now, when we first started our show today, we did something that we should have not done. We should have not let you know who brings you this show. So we're going to, right now, make sure you know who sponsors this show. This show is brought to you every day, every week, not every day, but on a weekly basis by Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit, which is a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically black colleges and universities, to utilize black-owned farmlands, HBCU campuses, to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the unemployment and underemployment of young African-American men and women around this country, also to educate the black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts on climate change and the need for environmental education in the black community. Through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on black America, is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, which you're listening to from our nation's capital. We're streaming online over the World Wide Web, over Blog Talk Radio. We're broadcasting live, and we're streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and Link. Also, it's brought to you by Scotton Communications Network. Scotton Communications Network, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online and traditional newspaper production, online and traditional speech writing, book writing, editing and publishing, and speaker bureau management. And for contact information, that's S-C-O-T-T-O-N, Scotton Communications with an S, network.com. It's a mouthful, ladies and gentlemen, but that's all one word, Scotton Communications, network.com. And you can please take the time to contact Dr. Gwendolyn Scott Bethay on, because she can definitely use your and provide you with the services needed, and she can definitely use your business. So this is what we do here every week here on this show, and we're brought to you by the spot following sponsors that we just indicated. Now, we're going to take a pause for the calls, and we'll be right back here on this platform, Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on black America. I hope you've enjoyed our first segment of this show, which was a basic 101 in regulatory in the electricity industry and what is regulation in the industry. So it was, as the little boy said, it was straightforward, and we hope to the point. So we're going to take a pause for the calls. We'll be right back.
I hear the song was singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key
in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethea. And you know, you can join us by dialing our call-in number. Once again, you can join us by calling our call-in number. And you know what that number is. You can reach us by dialing 646-668-2948. Once again, you can reach us by dialing 646-668-2948. Now, as we were talking about the basics and understanding what these different entities, what role they play in this energy industry, we're talking about an industry that controls any country or society. The energy industry determines whether you're going to have a high level of manufacturing and production. Your GNP, everything is based around energy. You just can't get around it. As I've indicated and time again on this show, everything starts with energy and everything ends with energy. And it's straightforward. I mean, it's really not a way to get around this. But I often reach out to individuals, and I give them the invite to become on this platform, Solar Now in the Future, with its economic impact on Black America. Now, we reached out for Ms. Denise Fairchild, who's president of Emerald Cities Collaborative, which is based here in Washington, D.C., about energy democracy. She co-authored a book, Fairchild's Help to Explain the Concept of Energy and the Energy Democracy, for a recent episode on a podcast. And I usually, you know, we do this and the way we do it, we always give credit where credit due. Now, this particular article was authored by Maria McCoy and John Furwell, and they produce a podcast. What exactly is energy democracy, and how will you achieve it? The Institute for Local Self-Reliance, which is a nonprofit organization, is seeking to answer to this complex question. But we are also far from the only folks doing so. ILRS shares this space with the Energy Democracy Project, which came together in 2016 with editors Denise Fairchild and Al Wingbrum, and published a book on the subject in 2017, Energy Democracy, Advancing Equity and Clean Energy Solutions. The book illustrates what democracy looks like in practice. It says the book talks about what democracy looks like in practice. On the episode of the Local Energy Rules podcast, John Farrell speaks with Denise Fairchild, president of Emerald Cities Collaborative, about energy democracy. And as I indicated, she's co-authored this book. Now, I had the privilege of being on a panel at the University of the District of Columbia with Mrs. Fairchild, who's an African-American sister here in based, and her firm is based here in Washington, D.C. I think it would be worth your time to log on to our website at positivechangepc.com. You can scroll down, you can click on the webcast, and you'll be able to hear her speaking in her own voice, talking about energy and democracy. But what she talks about is the fact that you have no democracy because the utility, the gas and oil and coal companies in this country basically own Congress. And that's a fact. And renewables, you know, as much as they're talking about, you know, we got legislation moving here, you got legislation moving here, but the renewable energy industry does not have the capital behind it that the gas, oil, and coal industry has. And you better damn believe when you go to Capitol Hill, we got the best House and Senate that money can buy. The lobbyists talk and everybody else walk. Money talks. So we're caught between being on the planet and being off the planet because of greed. And these competing factions in the energy industry, they're not friends to each other. This is about power and wealth, ladies and gentlemen. And you need to listen to this podcast. And John Farrell does a great job in the interview with Mrs. Denise Fairchild, and she does an excellent job explaining what these issues are. We got to get over about the fact that we ain't buying energy, and it's not, it's a boring topic, bro. Something that people, it's dry and something that people don't want to hear. Well, hell, you paying for it. Legislation is being passed in all renewable portfolio standards. Renewable portfolio standards is a bill coming out of the Senate right now by one of the senators by, I think, year 2025 or 2030. They want to have renewable portfolio standard legislation passed in all 50 states. Well, you can damn believe that this is impacting us now, and we're going to hit on articles in this show about that. And as we said, we always try to take a little pause for the cause, catch our breath, and we come back, and we'll be right back talking about some of these other articles and some of the issues in the campaign. Because one of the major issues in the campaign that is being discussed right now is who's talking about the Green Initiative. Because 45 has lost his mind. He just went to the G8 or G7 summit, and when it came time for him to be participate on global warming, hell, he didn't even show up. Not only did he pull the U.S. out of the Paris Accords, but he didn't even show up. This happened this week. New lawsuit restriction on solar panels. Duke Energy Renewables programs allow large customers to negotiate direct suppliers. That's a very, very important article, which I'm going to touch upon. Before I do that, I'm going to talk about Sanders unveils a $16 trillion green New Deal plan and ideas to pay for it. Ladies and gentlemen, you will, I will, and if you, your grandkids will be paying for this because they're rolling this stuff out and it is a global warming. We're in a crisis mode. Senator, now this particular article was just published on August 22nd. Inside News, and it was published by Nichols. This last name is K-U-S-N-E-T-Z. So I won't break it up too bad, but I'm going to spell it out rather than chew it up. Senator Bernie Sanders described his Green New Deal as a 10-year mobilization to avert climate catastrophe. Doing his climate change, justice, and equity will be a factor in the virtual every area of policy, from immigration to trade to foreign policy and beyond. Credit Ethan Miller, Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders unveiled a $16.3 trillion plan for Green New Deal on Thursday, giving shape to a massive program to overhaul the nation's economy and eliminate fossil fuels by the mid-century. The plan sets some of the most ambitious goals announced by any candidate yet, including setting a 2030 deadline for both electricity and transportation to be run entirely by renewable energy. The idea of launching the Green New Deal on par with the New Deal of the 1930s can capture the attention of young activists who see it as a social and economic revolution to combat climate change. The version discussed so far, public as in Congress, has been mostly aspirational, something to inspire the people. But Sanders' plan starts to layer into detail and answer key questions about cost and how to pay for it. The price tag, the Vermont, the Senator plans is far higher than the climate plans announced by any of his rivals, but it also is more wide-reaching. It describes how money would be spent across the economy, from grants for new electric vehicles, to funds to help farms capture carbon in the soil, to job training, including $1.3 trillion in support for workers in the fossil fuel industry. True to the Green New Deal core concepts, the proposal laces environmental and economic justice throughout, promising to help lift people from poverty while protecting minority communities that are harmed disproportionately by pollution and the effects of warming the atmosphere. This is what I got a problem with. This is bull BS. Because if black folks are not at the table in these discussions, from our historically black colleges to our business sector, and getting our young people ready for this, hell, it doesn't matter. Well, we don't have any discussion going on around these issues, and these are the issues that people are going to go to the polls and vote on. The climate crisis is not only a single greatest challenge facing our country, it is also the single greatest opportunity to build more than just an equitable future. We must act immediately, Sanders said in a statement. He said the program would amount to a 10-year mobilization to avert climate catastrophe, during which climate change, justice, and equity will be factored into virtually every area of policy, from immigration to trade and foreign policy and beyond. Sanders' proposals claims it will pay for itself over 15 years through a combination of new taxes, fees, and litigation against fossil fuel companies, new taxes on corporations, and the wealthy people, together with cuts in military spending related to the U.S. reliance on oil savings across the economy. With Washington Governor Jay Inslee ending his campaign on Wednesday, Sanders announced by that may position him as the leading candidate on climate change. But key elements of the plan, including the proposal to phase out nuclear and exclude carbon capture and the sequestration, are drawing criticism from experts who say it is understanding the cost and feasibility of adopting 100% renewable energy within a decade, and that it's overly fossil fuel companies and corporations more broadly. Is 100% renewable deadline doable? Now, this is the question that's being raised in this article. Sanders' Green Deal lays out rapid transition away from fossil fuels in line with the goal of the Paris Climate Agreement to limit warming to less than 2 degrees Celsius from pre-industry times. Much of the world comes from eliminating fossil fuels from both electricity and transportation sectors. Over a decade, Sanders investing near $2.5 trillion in renewable energy and energy storage, all of which would be publicly owned, $500 billion upgrading electric grids, and more than $2 trillion in grants for energy efficiency weatherization. To convert the nation's vehicle fleet, we would spend $3 trillion to help people and businesses buy electric cars and trucks, and $900 billion for public transportation and high-speed rail. The most controversial element is this would rely entirely on renewable energy sources and not any false solutions like nuclear, geoengineering, carbon capture and sequestration, and trash incinerators. NASA Climate Policy Associates with Naskin Center, a centrist think tank, said that the exclusion undermines the cost and the difficulty of the task. When you're really thinking about transition to a decarbonized power grid, that is essentially essential to do that to maintain cost-effective switch is having a wide portfolio of options at your disposal, he said. I find it very difficult to imagine what we can reach at a competitive decarbonized electricity and transportation system by 2030, especially if we're limiting on our options exclusively on wind, solar, and geothermal. Okay, Samantha Gross, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, said in an email that she agreed with that position, and also that she is troubled by what she called an anti-business sentiment. Sanders' plans is exciting the cause of all renewable power generations funded by a plan to rapidly be owned. Competition in the power industry can be good, but we've seen opposition to everything making a profit, and there is focus on creating more federal entities to transform the power sector, environmental justice, and the big transition. This is another subtopic which I'm going to touch upon, because black folks, we ain't having this conversation. But this is what white folks are talking about. And what they talk about, being that, as Dr. Neely Fuller said, we are prisoners of war, what they are talking about sets the tone. So when are we going to start having this mainstream conversation in the black community over black talk radio vernacular in the so-called mainstream black talk media? I don't know. I do know I beat the drum here on solar now and the future with its economic impact on black America. And whether we like it or not, it is what it is. You may not set the tone, and you may not set the drum line, but we're all marching to the beat of the drum. Make no mistake about that. Okay? Environmental justice and the big transition beyond transportation and power sector, Sanders plan flushes out the Green New Deal would stretch into various corners of the economy to eliminate greenhouse gases emissions while lifting people out of poverty. The plan commits to support poor and minority communities throughout. It claims it would create 20 million new high-paying union jobs in manufacturing, energy retrofitting, and other sectors. There are also grants to help poor communities protect themselves from the impact of the warming climate and incentives and labor standards to ensure new jobs pay fair wages and provide benefits. But there are also trillions of dollars in grants throughout the program elements that would help low and moderate income people and small businesses and electrify their homes and vehicles and reduce their energy use costs. These make up the bulk of spending to adopt electric vehicles, for example. Well, see, this is what I'm talking about. If we're not training and we don't have our people getting their certifications as electricians and to be able to do electrical wiring for electric charging stations, if we're not training our people to be PV installers, if we're not getting the opportunity in the solar renewable energy industry now, when all of this shit comes down the pipe, those folks who are already positioning themselves, this ain't checkers, ladies and gentlemen. This is chess. You got white women who are monopolizing this industry as we speak, running the advocacy organizations, the 501c3 organizations, and setting up. They set up development renewable energy companies. I ain't mad at them, but they only have 35 African American solar installation and development companies doing business out of 9,000 in the U.S. And you're talking about you getting ready to generate these billions of dollars in grants in all these areas. When are we gonna prepare ourselves when the White House initiative on HBCUs will be here September the 8th through the 11th, and they got 52 sessions, and not one of them is addressing this damn issue. I'm not making this up, ladies and gentlemen. Sanders also promised to provide 5 years of unemployment insurance, wage guarantees, health care, jobs, training, and other support workers in the fossil fuel industries whose jobs would be eliminated. In other words, they got to retrain. With 20 million in new jobs will include employment in sustainable agriculture and civilian conservation crops. Sanders include detailed plans on how farming and conservation can help the nation cut emissions and store more carbon in the soil with protecting small farms and supporting well-paid jobs. Well, hell, if they're issuing licenses for industrial hemp and only one African American got a license in the whole damn state of South Carolina, I don't know how many African Americans applied for industrial hemp farming licenses. But these are the issues that we need to be discussing in our community is when the Department of Agriculture, when that budget was passed, and the Department of Agriculture bill got passed, it legalized industrial hemp in all 50 states. Since that time, you have the Department of Agriculture in all 50 states gearing up for in this new crop. Industrial hemp is one of the biggest ways to pull carbon emissions out of the air through planting industrial hemp, as well as the CBD industry from the hemp and cannabis industry. Where are we in this discussion? talking about this other than yours truly on this platform solely now in the future with its economic impact on Black America. This is going to impact us, ladies and gentlemen, whether we like it or not. Can you plan pay for itself? Can the plan pay for itself? That's what it says. Can the plan pay for itself? Now, we're going to look at this. Sanders claimed that his plan will pay for itself over 15 years. He lays out several sources of revenue, savings, but he doesn't say exactly how these sources will add up to more than $16 trillion. Sanders writes that he would impose new taxes, fees on fossil fuel companies and would generate revenue from suing the companies, fossil fuel companies, too, as well as adding on taxes to investors of fossil fuel income and wealth. He plans to say it makes corporations and the wealthy people pay their fair share and that new jobs it creates will bring additional income revenue and reduce the need for spending on social safety nets. It says that ending reliance on oil will allow for the defense spending. While the plan mentions the high cost of failing to address climate change, it cites 4.5 trillion lost in economic activity by the end of the century. If uncertain wealth, whether preventing those losses are counted toward paying for the plan, conspicuously absent in any attention of a carbon tax. Something Sanders has supported in the past. Some of the activists who helped shape the Green Deal have come out against the carbon tax, saying it could push the cost onto the poor. Well, hell, it's already being passed on the poor in the District of Columbia with the renewable portfolio standards because of the shortfall of DC-based solar. DC ratepayers, when Bowser in 2016 signed the first renewable portfolio standard law, it had a 5% carve out. The law was written whereas Pepco by law has to purchase their extracts or energy credits from their customer base. Well, Pepco ran the numbers. They don't have enough space in the district. And if the DC government is not going to put money into roof repair to help low and moderate income residents fix their roofs, you can't put PV systems on their roofs large enough to generate additional credits that Pepco can purchase. And because of the shortfall of DC-based solar in 2016, DC ratepayers paid $15 million extra. In 2017, that number jumped to $26.6 million. And in 2018, the Omnibus Act of 2018 was passed, and the carve-out went to 10%. Now, this is supposed to be over a 10-year period. They're talking about how it is carving, how the carve-out, but right now, D.C. has the highest extract values in the country, and everybody's making money who got a PV system on their damn roof that can afford to put one on their roof. Now is the time to have a PV system on your roof because you can benefit from that. But guess who's left out of the loop? The African-American community, because most of us don't have the money or the credit to get a PV system on our roof if they're not in the programs out there, are not out there providing as much access to this area. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not making this up. It is what it is. This is what Bernie Sanders has unveiled, a $16 trillion Green New Deal plan and ideas to pay for it. Well, right now it's ideas to pay for it. The issue is whether the fossil fuel lobbyists on Capitol Hill gonna be able, you're gonna be able to get the votes to move this stuff forward if Bernie Sanders is elected. So there's a whole bunch of stuff up in the air. But any of this here beats what the hell 45 is talking about, because he ain't talking about nothing but a global warming don't exist. Man, give me a break. So we're going to take a pause for the cause here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And we'll be right back here. And we're going to drill down and look at some other issues.
Life is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing. I got you. Sing it.
Welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay. And I hope you have been enjoying the information that we've been bringing to you today on this show, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know you can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. And you'll be in our room, green room. Please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, as we were talking about this new green plan that Bernie Sanders is proposing, here we have the Congressional Black Caucus, the White House Initiative on HBCUs, everybody be converging on Washington, D.C., of the basically second week in September. And we're not going to have a hell of a lot of discussion around these issues. I'm going to attend a number of these venues I've been invited to. Ladies and gentlemen, Black folks, we got to get on time. We always, as Hurl Bell told me one time, Brother Hurl Bell is a sports historian and pioneer in the broadcasting industry in the Washington DMV market area, radio talk show area. And he said, "But say, Black folk, we always a day late and a dollar short." And a lot of this is on us, because our so-called leadership, they don't think outside the box. I don't think they're thinking inside the box, because you think you're going to keep going to the same folk asking them to help you. Well, you sit on the most valuable resource in the world. Our HBCUs have property. You got land. You got land. And it's just like the most valuable resources we have is our young people. Dr. King meant good, but he came up with something talking about integration. To integrate into historically white colleges and universities. Oh, they integrated, okay, right? They took what? Our cream of the crop, our top athletes, our top testing African-American students at the historically white colleges and universities. Most of our kids who have And not all of them, but a large number of them with decent GPAs, they won't even look at a historic HBCU to attend. Now, we look at what has happened. The television advertising market, as the population has gone over 300 million people in this country, and all of your major colleges and universities in your power conferences have formed their own television networks. What do they do? The Clemsons of this world, the Alabamas of this world, these are the schools that compete every year for the national championship because of what? They get the top black African-American athletes. They wouldn't be winning these national titles without our kids. And when we look at the start of the football season, and we look at the fact that our historical black colleges now, the so-called FCS schools, which is the sub, it's called the sub-level in Division I, are playing these historically white colleges and universities. The odds is for Florida A&M against UNCF is a 45.5 point spread. Howard University plays the University of Maryland is a 29.5% point spread. The only reason why there's such a large point spread because the white schools know that they have the best athletes. If that talent pool were at our historical black colleges and universities, it wouldn't be that kind of point spread wouldn't exist. But it is, does exist. Now we're at a point where of no return. Our kids are never going, our top athletes and top academic students are never going to be at our HBCUs again. We'll get a percentage of them, but the masses of them will never go back to HBCUs because we weren't thinking and looking at the whole picture. So a lot of our so-called black college presidents and so-called leadership, all they can think about now is bringing more white students into HBCUs and damn near integrating the schools out of existence like West Virginia State. And we get more and more blacks who attended historically white schools being appointed as presidents of our school, and they do not care about our institution. It's a job to them. And the way they look at it, as long as they can get their check and keep the doors open, keep a new building going up where the alumni can come back and say, oh, look at that new shiny building there. It's not about that. It's about what and why those institutions were founded in the first place, because of racism in this country. We cannot go to these historically white colleges and universities. Why do I compare that to the energy sector? Because the same damn thing is happening right now. With this new economy being created in, with renewable energy, we are not having the discussion. We're not coming together and organizing, supporting each other so we can move forward and have a plan of action. We're not doing that. Rather than us running to each other, hell, we're running away from each other. That's not my opinion. That's what I have researched and found to be a fact. Because everybody can have their opinion, but everybody can't have facts. But what I just read to you is a fact. These things are moving forward with us or without us. Now, as we drill down and we begin to look at other issues, I'm going to touch on an issue that speaks just to that. Last week I did a show, and I talked about a minister in North Carolina, Minister Nelson Johnson, who had, in fact, put solar panels on the roof of their church. This case went all the way to the Supreme Court in North Carolina, and the Supreme Court ruled against the church, saying that they don't have the right to sell the energy from that roof to members in their congregation. You get what you're talking about. They gonna, and this is what you get with a regulated industry. They're going to lose customer base. Here's an article, and when we get to talking about our historical black colleges and universities, we only got 3 solar farms out of 106 schools that are built on the campuses. We have other schools that have put some solar up, but we're talking about megawatt-sized farms. You have UMES, it's got a 17-acre farm, and you got U.S. Virgin Islands. I understand that that farm has been sold or something has happened with it. University of U.S. Virgin Islands, and you have Bowie State University with a 7-acre farm. I beat the drum about Georgetown University building a 30-megawatt farm on 200 acres of land in Charles County. I beat the drum about George Washington University, George Washington University Hospital, and American University partnered with a power purchase agreement with Duke Energy. They built a 20-megawatt farm near Elizabeth City, North Carolina. That farm has been online. The other farm with Georgetown is building is coming online. Here is an article. Duke Renewables programs allows large customers to negotiate directly with suppliers. And I know what I'm talking about, ladies and gentlemen, because I've been working on several projects for clients who have farmlands who are interested in building large-scale power plants. And what we've run into in terms of having to sell directly to co-ops that have agreements with Duke Energy, and they want to basically lock you in at 3 cents when you're paying 20 cents a kilowatt hour. So you can't get a decent return, even though the farm will generate the energy and generate the income. It won't come back to the person who builds that as a small power plant developer. This stuff is inconceivable, but I'm gonna speak on this particular article at this time. Now, this article was written by Robert Walton. It was published on August 22nd, 2019, in Utility Drive. This article went on to say, Duke Energy is preparing to expand its Green Source Advantage GSA program in North Carolina, which will allow large customers to negotiate directly with renewable energy suppliers on price terms. These terms include the purchase of the renewable energy certificates extracts from generation facilities and the length of the contract terms. Participating customers bear the entire cost, with which Duke officials said is not subsidized in any way. The 350-megawatt capacity currently set aside for the University of North Carolina system and major military installations will be opened up to all interested customers after 3 years, broadening the pool of potential customers. For those schools that are in the University of North Carolina system, a part of that system, they have a carve-out, which is by the state, where they can go directly to any large-scale power plant developer, private developer, and negotiate a deal, and that energy can be purchased. Duke large-scale non-residential electric customers in North Carolina now have a new option for procuring renewable energy with up to 600 megawatts initially available. The 250 megawatts currently is open to subscriptions, includes 160 megawatts for Duke Energy Carolina, and 90 megawatts for Duke Energy Progress. It is a flexible program which will help large customers meet renewable energy for substantial goals on their own. Stephen DeMay, Duke Energy North Carolina president, said in his statement, Duke will begin accepting GSA applications October 1 on the first-come, first-served basis. North Carolina Utility Commission approved the program in June, and a large version of the 250 pilot, which included Google and Crisco. Duke owns and operates 40 solar facilities in North Carolina, said it has invested $1 billion in renewable in the state, and the utility $62 million solar rebate program for residential and commercial non-customers in North Carolina helped 3,000 customers go solar in the first 2 years and will continue for three more. Ladies and gentlemen, this is something that black folks need to be paying close damn attention to. Our schools need to be coming together in North Carolina and a little consortium, which they've already got, saying, hey, we want to build large-scale solar farms so we can offset our own damn energy and do their own investment, because we got a lot of private schools that are not a part of this university system, such as the Livingstones of this world. This is real, ladies and gentlemen. This is real. And I know it's real because I'm dealing with it on a day-to-day basis, working on with some clients who are trying to move forward with building large-scale solar farms, one's in North Carolina, one's in South Carolina, two is in Texas. These are real issues. When you be talking about trying to identify off-takers and whether they will allow you to interconnect and the costs associated with this and the different entities, co-ops you're going to have to deal with, because we're not having this conversation, we act as though this ain't happening. Oh, it's happening whether we're having the damn conversation or not. These are real issues. Real, real issues. Now, as we say, you can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. We gonna let people know who brings you this show every week. You know, after we take this pause for the calls, we'll be right back here on Solar Now in the future with its economic impact on Black America, because we got information to sort of lay on you till we end this show, because we still haven't gotten to our solar career opportunity information session for the DMV market area that we do every week, and we're going to close that the next 8 minutes out with providing information on that. So we're going to take another pause for the calls here on Solar Now in the Future with this economic.
Is a song worth singing. I can tell. Sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Singing, I got you. Sing it.
singing,
I can tell.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan.
Change it.
Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.
Welcome, welcome back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know you can join us by calling 646-668-2948. Once again, that calling number is 646-668-2948. And we're going to head into our weekly topic, Solar Career Opportunity Information Session for the DMV market area, which is a segment that we started in a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to talk about positions in the public-private sector. These are internships that are being offered by the Department of Energy here in Washington, D.C. The pathways for internship priorities: you have a position in Germantown, Maryland, Office of the Chief Financial Officer. Student trainee, if they need an accountant, okay? Office, other graduate positions in the DMV market area, it would be in the Office of the Chief Financial Officer, they need an accountant in Germantown, Maryland. The U.S. Department of Information Administration needs a management program analyst here in Washington, D.C. Also, the U.S. Department of Information Administration need a research analyst and economist here in Washington, D.C. All of that information can be found by logging on to www.energy.gov/jobs/new-interns and recent graduate opportunities. Once again, that web address is www.energy.gov.jobs, new interns, and recent graduate opportunities. Now, that is with the Department of Energy and Environment here in Washington, D.C. Also, we are looking at jobs, which you will be also be able to find at that same website. We're gonna give you that website again. It's gonna be www.energy.gov/jobs/search. And you'll be able to find all of the different positions that are available nationwide under the Department of Energy. Okay? That is available there. And also, you'll be able to log on to Indeed, INDED.com, type in keyword solar energy, put in your zip code at the top, and you'll be able to find a number of other positions that are here in the DMV market area in Atlanta, Maryland. You have Confidential Solar Company of Atlanta. They're looking immediately opens for solar installers, which is paying between $15 to $18 an hour. You find every, okay, you also have an entry-level sales representative position with Trinity Solar in Hanover, Maryland. That job, I guess, will pay They're indicating $50,000 to $90,000 a year, but you can click on that and you'll get the full details. Structural construction Hepburn in Handover, Maryland, which is Trinity Solar. Structural construction helper must have proof and carpentry experience. Then you have with Sun Entity Solar in Atlanta, Maryland. They have is looking for a sales consultant there. Also a direct sales representative for Trinity Solar in Hanover. They're indicating salary range between $50,000 to $100,000. Then you have a solar business development manager for SGC Power in Elkridge, Maryland, who we're seeking a Mid-Atlantic region project developer working in our Elkridge office. You'll be able to locate that. Spacecraft solar array engineer, John Hopkins, Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland. Then you need solar electrician, OMC technician in Bethesda, Maryland. That salary ranges between $42,000 to $55,000 a year, depending on experience. Clean energy experts in Newark Associates in Washington, D.C., downtown. So you see high experience professional, perspective, valuable full position, full-time job. It'll give you the income. Solar OM technicians with Bell Electric Inc., Washington, D.C., which is paying $42,000 to $55,000 a year. Retail solar consultants with Enlight Solar in Beltsville between $65,000 and $80,000 a year. These are all some of the positions that are available here in the DMV market area. We apologize that we didn't provide more time in our show to get more job positions, but you can go to Indeed.com, put in solar energy, put your zip code in, and it'll give you those positions in your market area, especially here in the DMV market area. There is a long, long listing of job opportunities. Pages. You got about six, almost 20 pages of job opportunities in the solar renewable energy industry here in the DMV market area. We hope that we brought to you news that you can definitely use here on another episode of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And remember, every week this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. And many of you who joined us, you know the slogan for this show: if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Also is brought to you by the Black Sports Legends, BSLF HBC Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and it's brought to you also by Scotton Communications, specializing in the following areas: public relations, writing, editing, web development, web editing, magazine production, online traditional, newspaper production, online traditional, book writing, editing, publishing, and speaker bureau management. Contact information at scottcommunicationsnetwork.com. And until next week, we hope that we brought you news that you can definitely use here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact. And until next week, as we say, sayonara.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can choose.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan.
Change it.
Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you
you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
I got you.
Sing it.